Meetings Act. This meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial proceeding. Any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. The quorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. Nancy, call to order. Our roll call, rather.
Here.
Councilman Nobody.
Here.
Strong.
Here.
Mr. Jasko.
Here.
Mr. Jiskie. Here. Mr. Neff. Dr. Susala. Mr. Curtis.
Here.
Ms. Walter. Mr. Bamboy.
Here.
Vice Chair Lindsay.
Here.
Chair Coulter.
Let's stand for a silent prayer and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any public comments for items not on this agenda? Any on Zoom?
No.
Pending litigation.
I'm pleased to report there is none.
Other business, the DEP stormwater ordinance, inland flood protection rule.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is a mandatory ordinance that is required by DEP for every municipality in the state to adopt. However, you can make modifications to the ordinance, but the ordinance that you have is pretty much following the model ordinance. And then the ordinance also may include comments from the Environmental Commission. I believe we have a representative here. And if you could please come forward and tell the board about the Environmental Commission's participation and what the commission's recommendations have been.
Yes. Thank you. First, as the board, I really appreciate the opportunity to come speak before you.
You can come up and take a seat.
We were very pleased.
For the record.
Sorry.
Tell us your name.
Yes, I'm Blake Deacon, and I am the chairperson of the Environmental Commission. I've had the privilege of serving on the commission for 5 years, with 3 years as the chair.
Thank you.
First and foremost, I think we were really delighted by the opportunity to review the matter. We actually received an email from CME back in November asking us to consider and provide feedback to the planning board as well as CME about potential adjustments to the stormwater ordinance that we would potentially recommend. I've been looking at this issue, ironically, since March 7th, 2020, where I was at an on-site ANJAC training up in North Jersey, where the NJDEP Assistant Deputy Commissioner was presenting on the then updated stormwater best management practices. It was a scintillating discussion about all the different potential changes, of which there's been additional enhancements made over time. When we discussed this matter over the past couple of months, and I think it's important to note, there's nobody on the Environmental Commission is all volunteers. There's nobody who's a credentialed professional that can study this in a great amount of detail. So we just made a lay interpretation of the proposed statewide ordinance, as well as we reviewed the Watershed Institute's enhanced model stormwater ordinance. Now, based on that analysis and other data that we have available to us, for instance, the New Jersey State Report on Climate Change, which predicts increases of annual precipitation of 4% to 11% by 2050, as well as storm intensification with increased rainfalls, we felt that it was appropriate to make a set of forward-looking recommendations based on what we're experiencing today, but with what we know we will be experiencing in the future. As a result, we looked over the model stormwater ordinance, and we made a number of recommendations. I'll try to economize on time and just go through them relatively quickly. But they've been provided to the board to review. Obviously, one last thing before I go through these, I think we've in the Environmental Commission, we're cognizant of the fact that we have a responsibility to advocate for the environment, environmentally conscientious leaders, but obviously there are competing concerns that have to be balanced, and obviously we have to find a court to make those final determinations.
Before you start that portion of your presentation, are the items you're going to go through all items that have been incorporated in the ordinance that the board has received?
They are, I apologize.
Highlighted?
I don't have that. Thank you. Okay. So I won't be able to answer that question exactly without reviewing this.
Okay, I just thought it might be easier for the board if you could say, this is in, this is not.
I see.
For them to evaluate.
But
I don't want to interrupt your presentation.
Yeah, no, I'll go through the recommendations that we had submitted, but I couldn't be able to cross-check this. And maybe, Mr. Dockery, maybe you can.
I know a bit about, so do we know what Mr. Romeyer's status is? He's still planning to attend, or we, he's running a bit late, because as these suggestions from the Environmental Commission were incorporated by CME, Mr. Romeyer would have first-hand knowledge, and I have some knowledge that I can share, you know, based on the meeting that we had, but I don't know if we wanted to, you know, hear from Blake about sort of large strokes of what the Environmental Commission suggested, and then when Doug arrives, we can speak to what was incorporated and what was omitted.
Fine. Sounds good. Okay, I'll economize and move relatively quickly through these. So there were eight recommendations that we made. The first was around the utilization of low impact development techniques. I think in the state ordinance, it is said that they should be leveraged, and the American Watershed Institute recommended that they must be used for both future and minor development. We made that recommendation. The second recommendation was around the threshold for major development. Again, the Watershed Institute recommended reducing the threshold for major development to 1.5 acre, which we also put forward. We suggested that the steep slopes area, which we consider to be an environmentally sensitive area, may require a more stringent definition of major development in the context of stormwater management, and we asked that CME consider it applying. That disturbance be expanded to include not only the placement and reconstruction of impervious surface, but also the replacement of impervious surface, meaning a repaving of the surface would be considered a disturbance. That impervious surfaces should be treated for water quality due to polluted runoff, which has negative environmental impacts, which are in the Watershed Institute. There's some interesting data here, which I'll go quickly through. Only 38% in the state of New Jersey, only 38% of monitored waters meet the standards for water supply, 24% meet the standards for recreation, 17% meet the standards for aquatic life, less than 1% of monitored waters meet the fish consumption standard. Obviously, we're lucky here in Atlantic Highlands to have a much higher water quality, as we see on a yearly basis when we look at the water quality reports. These are some stark data points affecting other communities in the state that could potentially impact others over time as this problem becomes exacerbated. We also asked that CME apply an offsetting more stringent standards for the definition of minor development to appropriately manage runoff. With regard to low development techniques, we suggested discouraging landscaping decisions which will result in the likely utilization of fertilizers and chemical pesticides. And finally, that the removal of more mature trees be discouraged with deference to any recommendations made by the Shade Tree Commission and or updates to the Shade Trees Ordinance. That's it at a high level. I think we know in the Environmental Commission that it's a big swing. But as I said before, we feel it our responsibility to advocate for environmentally conscious behaviors and make these recommendations.
Thanks, Mr. Deacon. Councilman Dockery, I don't know if there's anything. Yeah, if you just want to hang tight, like just in case,
yeah.
And Just let the record show that Mr. Romeyer is present here at the meeting. We're just getting into the DEP stormwater ordinance. So coming in hot.
No pressure or anything, but
I'm prepared. So we can give you a second to get settled there. But
so you're aware, Mr. Deacon just advised the board of the 8 points that the Environmental Commission had recommended, and we're going to be looking for you to basically indicate which of those have been incorporated and which may not have been applied.
Sure.
Thank you.
So, where do we start? The borough currently has on the books Chapter 311, which is the stormwater control ordinance, and I'm sorry if any of this is duplicative from what Mr. Deacon mentioned. The current stormwater control ordinance reflects the DEP's last round of stormwater management recommendations and updates to their regulations, which was adopted by the state in March of 2020. Following that, July of 23, the state further updated their ordinance, right? In order to assist the municipalities with updating their local ordinances in order to reconcile with the current state requirements, a model ordinance was issued and released for our benefit. So, with input from the Environmental Commission, looking at the model, what we put together was what's before the board and for everybody to consider, which is our draft ordinance for 2024. Let's see. Major changes at the state level that we're asked to incorporate are a few definitions have changed. The storm data itself, the precipitation rates and intensity, was increased in order to capture the storm events that we've been seeing recently. That was the main catalyst for the DEP's change. When modeling the quantity prong of stormwater management, the new code requires us to look at the current projections and future projections. So that's a big change. We'll see here a change from the modeling techniques. The rational method is no longer an acceptable way to model stormwater. We have to rely on the NRCS model. So those are like the major changes. What you'll see in our draft before the board tonight, there are some areas where we recommend to exceed the model requirements. We've seen this in other municipalities, and it seems to make sense, and I'll work my way through the code, and we can get a good understanding on where we meet the code, where we exceed the code, and I think I have the EC memo, so we could try to make sure I touch upon everything. The board members, you all have the draft ordinance with that's colored with yellow, blue, and green sections.
Okay.
I think those are the areas where we should focus on.
Yeah.
And is it all right if I walk through the whole document, or do you want me just to look at the EC recommendations?
The
highlighted sections we can go through, and if there's any additional comments or questions from the board, we can address those.
Thank you.
So in the definition section, I'm going to breeze right over the yellow portion. That's just administrative info. And once you get to definitions and the proposed code, the first section you come up to is a green highlighted section for LIDs or low impact developments.
This is something that was added above and beyond the model ordinance's minimum requirements. So I think that aligns with the initial recommendation of the city. So that's item one. You'll see that incorporated. We agree with it, and we incorporate that right into the draft definition section. The next part is the major development definition. I think that's going to be the crux of our entire discussion right now. So under the March 2020 state regs, major development is defined by basically two prongs. You're looking at new impervious and total disturbance. So if your project proposes to add, in general terms, if your project proposes to add a quarter acre or more of new impervious, you're meeting the stormwater definition of major development, or if you're disturbing an acre or more of land, exposing the soil, that also would put you into that major development category. Those criteria carry through in the current version, but it expands on it just a little bit, where we break out regulated impervious, regulated motor vehicle service, and any combination of the two. What you see in the draft here is a recommendation to reduce the trigger mechanism, because what we see here at this board is very often developments will come before the board and they don't meet those minimum stormwater thresholds, and basically at that point the developer is obligated to just meet or beat the current flow characteristics and not actually improve them and improve water quality and recharge and runoff rates. And by reducing the triggers in our definition, we're going to potentially grab more applications and allow the rules and the objectives of the state stormwater requirements to be implemented on more projects.
Can you re-explain that? I stumbled on this a lot. I understand the point is to reduce the triggers, but I guess I don't understand how that's a good thing. Is it reducing triggers? Like, do we not want to do that? So yeah, I'm totally lost on this one.
No problem. So most of the properties, like along First Avenue, application once it comes in to redevelop a piece, if it's not, the current regs say if you are adding a quarter acre or more of impervious, or if you're disturbing an acre of soil, then you have to do the stormwater control tasks. Year after year, when we submit the stormwater, the MS4 reports on behalf of the borough, one of the questions is, how many major developments were heard by the board in the previous year? Year after year here, it's zero. It's zero. So your lot size is the level of development that your lots are at now, how much impervious you have. We always see applications that are 80 or 100% impervious when they come to us, so they can't add the extra quarter acre, I guess, under the old regs. So what's happening is we're not capturing those developments and taking that opportunity to implement new techniques to control the stormwater. So the current regs here in place have the quarter acre and acre thresholds. So what's by reducing them down to half acre of disturbance or 5,000 square feet, quarter acre is 10,890 square feet of new impervious, so basically cut that in half, 5,000 square feet of impervious. So a redevelopment project or a new project will hit those triggers more quickly, and by doing that, then they have to address quantity controls, quality controls, and recharge in accordance with the state. Also, under the current reg, if you don't hit that, what I was mentioning is there's no definition now for minor development. So either you're major or you just have to not negatively impact your neighbors downstream. That's how it works now. What you'll see as we flip through We're proposing to add some additional language to define what a minor development is. And if you're a minor development, we're proposing some minor, less impactful, some easier techniques to control stormwater and help the overall system and control your impacts to the neighbors. So we're in the definition section still of the draft ordinance in blue. What I included here was a discussion point for us to consider the first three highlighted sections before the red text. That's verbatim what the model recommends. Then if you, after the first three highlighted sections, there's a note in the model ordinance that says definition of major development above what we first have is those triggers that I talked about. The definition of major development above aligns with the definition of NJAC 7:8.1.2. That's the NJDEP stormwater regs that we're modeling our local code after, and it's recommended for consistency. So that top part is what the state is recommending for consistency. It goes on further to say alternatively, a municipality may adopt the following definition, which is the minimum standard required. So this is something where I'm a little concerned on deviating from the recommendation of the actual model ordinance in the terms of the definition of major development and going with the alternative. And the reason for that is some applications before our local board may also concurrently have to go to the DEP for permitting. And when the DEP does their review, this is the definition that they're going to be held to as an applicant. So for consistency, having one stormwater report, one modeling system, it's achieving the same thing, I think, as the alternate definition, but at this point, I'm leaning towards recommending the standard one, unless like you had like some other reasoning that I'm not aware of to go with the alternate. It's achieving the same thing, I believe.
I prefer strategies, and I agree.
It's not. I feel like it's saying the same thing, just rewording it in a way where it's pointing to the standard rather than stating the standard. So I recommend we keep that first part, the standard definition for major development, with the additional restrictions down from 10,000 square feet of, I'm sorry, the model recommend, the model list of major development initially minimally be triggered at an acre, where we're gonna drop that down to a half acre in this draft, and then a quarter acre of increased, or the creation of a quarter acre of, I'm sorry, I'm saying that backwards. When it comes to the new impervious component, the minimum requirement is a quarter acre, and we're recommending reducing that down to 5,000 square feet, which is roughly half. That's like the most technical part of any of the changes. So I just want to stop talking for a second and see if there's any questions or we're okay with that.
So I have a question as I was reviewing this, and maybe I'm missing it or maybe it's just my observation, but I noticed this focuses heavily on the end result of the property, and that's great, right? A lot of these things, a lot of these options for stormwater prevention, exiting of the property, you know, not having any runoff and whatnot. I find in town there's a lack of stormwater and runoff control when the project is in its phase. And I believe as a town, we need to enhance that aspect, because on many occasions what was presented by the developers, engineering, professional and everything else doesn't work, right? So let's go back to the Denholz property, right? They had what they considered a SWIP plan that did not work. Pictures of that, you could obviously see that. So I feel that this, the the end result looks great about utilizing different features, but I feel like as a town, we're weak on the enhancements during that construction phase and what's allowed, because that's when a huge amount of runoff takes place in this town. That's when a ton of silt, debris, sand, soil, everything that's on the property is running off the property during that construction phase. And I find that we have focused and enhanced the final appearance, right? But what about before we get to that? Nobody's putting in vegetation. Nobody's creating wells and everything before a project's finished. How do we get there, right? Without impacting our systems and creating an extensive amount of work. That's just my observation.
I'd agree with you on that. I think we're more likely, actually. But is that something that could be also included in this?
Well, I don't know. That's kind of why I brought it up. Why are you looking at me?
I haven't seen another municipality address that issue in this code.
It's usually done in instruction. They're required to put some fences on.
But what supervisory agency is that? Three Old Soil? Or is that EEP?
Who's Three Old Soil?
Yeah. So that's what my main question to this discussion is: what jurisdiction do we have?
Right.
I don't know that we do, and I mean, I absolutely see your point. But if it's Uniform Construction Code, if it's Freehold Soil, if it's, you know, I don't know that we can address
over the 5,000 square feet triggers that you have to have and a grading plan. But like you said, that's kind of a little of both. It's kind of when you're finished, it must look like this.
Sure.
Yeah, so this, I find that this focuses on this is what it needs to look like, right? And I think as a town, if we really want to enhance everything with regards to the stormwater pollution prevention, that we throw maybe a little caveat in there about that phase of the work. So we regain some control if other organizations are not doing the inspections and what they're supposed to do.
Control is going to have to go through executive level, rather this board doesn't have enforcement jurisdiction, so that would have to designate either code enforcement, construction official, someone else would be required to monitor that and then to issue summonses, complaints, notices of violation.
But how come when they come forward with their design plan and everything, how come? Right, for example, so yeah, some of this would come, right, if they can't meet this criteria, it would come from them.
If they can't meet that criteria, they're going to have to ask the board for relief, and the board is going to have to control that. But once, if the relief is granted, it's going to be under some certain conditions, and those conditions are going to be monitoring of the development. The monitoring is going to go on through the construction office and through code enforcement.
I have a question. Along the harbor by the trail, so that's letting the stormwater flow. So it's failing. So how does that work? How do you resolve that problem like that?
You put in some grassy bales, right? I can go through here.
No, I thought.
We're
talking without pond-sized water. I got pictures of it. It's flooding the whole harbor now. And it seems like the storm drains are not working. And I think it could be resolved if someone would look at it. But maybe the storm drains just moving under there, or the storm drains are getting clogged. they should be cleaned out every once in a while.
There could be a busted drain. I mean, you don't know.
Excuse me?
There could be something busted underneath, right?
That, well, the last time it flooded out, they said there was a stuffed animal.
Okay.
I tell people, and no one seems to do anything, but now what's happening, the ground is lower, so now we have puddles there. What was supposed to happen, they did do a drainage, but it's failing. They put the trail in, compact dirt. Now none of the water is going through, is going past that trail now. It's all stopping, and then water from, just say, from Shore Casino is running back to the trail. So what we're doing is we're creating a little valley, and the water that's pulling out is like, it's the size of this building. So it's not like it can be fixed with bales of hay or anything like that. It's not runoff. It's not runoff. Well, it's runoff, not moving.
It's not going in or running off.
It's not. It's in there. What's drainage is not working.
What's changed? What do you think?
I think there might be movement in the pipes underneath. And I think that the trail, what they were supposed to do, they put like a French drain in front of the trail. I think that's causing more trouble. But it seems like it'd be fixed. Maybe it's like. And then just cleaning up the drains. I don't know if anybody.
People don't clean up their drains.
I think before this conversation runs off too much here, let's just get back to the highlighted section.
Right.
Of course, we can continue the conversation, but let's just focus back on the highlighted section for right now. If there was any questions in particular or anything about that, if not, we can start moving on further into the report here.
So, any suggestions?
How do you perceive? Somebody would have to look to see whose property it is.
Yeah, I think it's under county jurisdiction.
Sounds like
county. It's under county jurisdiction.
The trail.
And then that's where you have to go.
County, so he'd have to contact the county. And then
the order doesn't have jurisdiction.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to. I've talked to people, and it's not getting anywhere. So.
We can talk offline.
Yeah.
We can find out who you talk to. And we'll
I think I'm talking to the people who's supposed to be talking to.
Okay. This is the first time hearing it, so.
That's my point.
All right.
So, and we'll talk
about it. Maybe I'm not talking to the right people.
Specific question about the during construction phase. I agree it is an SESC, a soil conservation district issue. Like, that's when their jurisdiction starts, when you break ground. And then once you complete it and restore the site to the finished product that we're talking about, that concludes their component. But the key item in your soil erosion permit or your certificate is that sequence of construction. That's where you address temporary sediment basins, temporary berming, even beyond the silt fence and that. So if it's something that we feel strong about, maybe we could look to incorporate a sequence of construction element into this that would parallel soil erosion's jurisdiction. That way we get a level of comfort that there is a plan in place to take care of it, even though
we're putting in redundancy. I get that.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like for the betterment of our town, maybe it is something that we need to do, because it's something I notice repeatedly in every construction site, every development, and every renovation that takes place in the town is the amount of runoff.
Is that something that we could do or suggest doing for minor development? Because it's only for major development, right?
The county's real soil is the district that regulates Atlantic Highlands, Real Soil Conservation District. Their threshold is 5,000 square feet of soil disturbance.
Right.
So we could look in both major or minor developments per our definition that a sequence of construction and means of soil erosion protection be implemented. We can incorporate something like that if that's a recommendation of the board to update the draft before it gets introduced. just make a quick note if that's something like that.
Yeah, it, like I said, it's just a suggestion. I mean, I'm not right or wrong. I'm just putting it out there to see, you know.
It was a suggestion.
Yeah, and then they have to look at it. I just happen to notice it a lot.
It's a good thought, and I think we can make that recommendation, right? The freehold soil override whatever we decide to do. Not us, but if somebody says, I'm going to sue you, that's not what freehold soil says, because yours is a lower threshold than ours.
But we're allowed to be more stringent, are we?
Okay.
But not with the DEP.
No, we can be more stringent than DEP.
Oh, we can.
Yeah, we can
be less stringent.
Can we take a moment as we consider, as we continue this conversation, just to talk about timeline on this? So the DEP mandates that we have to pass these minimums by July of 2024. So we have, it's May, we have 2 months. Essentially, the timeline we're looking at is, this is a concept review, as we did with the First Avenue, the Central and Historic Business Density. We're reviewing the concept. This has not yet been introduced to council. The plan would be for something to be introduced to council either at the May 9th meeting or at the latest, the May 23rd meeting. The introduced ordinance would come back to this body for consistency review at the June meeting, so I think it's June 6th. And then there would be public hearing and possible adoption in June, giving us, we only have one meeting in June, we have one meeting in July, giving us the buffer of, if anything were to, any complications were to arise, we have an additional month in order to pass it. So just wanted to put that out there in terms of timeline, what we're looking at, because I think it's important to consider that. And certainly these are all important discussions, and these are important issues, and these are issues. The reason why it's important that this body gets a crack at this is because we see the issues. We know what these projects are encountering in terms of runoff and silt, et cetera, et cetera. So just wanted to state that out loud publicly.
I also feel with these changes that in order for us to stay, we may have to maybe change our decision making with regards to expansion of existing properties that do not meet some of this criteria, right? So how is that going to, how does that impact that? Right. So as the residents come forward and they need to make reservations and renovations, and they're already on lots that don't meet some of this criteria, does this tie our hands to assist them in making those changes because it's not going to comply?
No, it actually gives you more power to deny something that's not going to comply. That's something.
I just want to see how it impacts and played into the existing non-conformances that we do have.
That said, though, Mr. Stein, this body could grant relief in certain, right?
Sure. Sure. That's up to it's up to the applicant to convince you that they should be granted relief.
Got it. Just making it clear.
Okay. I'm jumping between a few documents. Some housekeeping for the Environmental Commission recommendations. We talked about item one, we talked about item two. Item three, steep slope area, environmentally sensitive area may require more stringent definition of major development in the context. This draft recommends, and isn't really distinguishing between the steep slope area and the rest of the borough. We have the steep slope ordinance that stands alone and significantly restricts development in those areas. I'm not seeing a lot of properties in the steep slope zone that actually trigger or meet these thresholds where it would be applicable, but if they were, we would have to consider the types of controls to be implemented on the hillside for particular. We discourage infiltration and recharge. So I think we should look to the steep slope area, the steep slope ordinance, more to put additional controls in that zone specifically, rather than try to capture that specific area in this overall SCO. So for the recommendation, I like the recommendation, and I think an area in the code where we might be able to capture some of the objectives of the SCO in the steep slope zone would be with the bulk chart and the zoning chart, where we could look to reduce allowable impervious and lot coverage, like those types of controls, rather than pick and choose calculation requirements in the SCO ordinance for one specific area. We have a real powerful steep slope ordinance in place, and I think we should look to bolster that for the zoning rather than address it here. So, for item three, I didn't really distinguish anything. Item four on the recommendations from EC, I agree. So, the recommendation is to expand the definition of disturbance to include replacement of impervious area. So, that is my interpretation. And if you have a existing parking lot or a roadway or driveway, that's going to be what I call reconstructed, actually pulled all the way down, disturb the soil beneath, and then build it back. I would consider that disturbance. There is in the definition of disturbance as the model, and how we have it shown, there is a caveat for the milling and wood paving. So, like, if you just mill down and it's still road underneath, that's not usually considered disturbance. So, a replacement of a pavement surface or an impervious surface definitely would be. I don't have a problem adding replacements up into the definition itself. So, I agree with that recommendation. It was left out of the definition because I feel like it's already included by the reconstruction of the impervious. I think that is saying the same thing.
Well, people perceive that as not being able to replace with like in kind.
That'd be part of the development in order for that. If I'm repaving my driveway, then I'm not being able to do without parents. It's only part of so much disturbance.
So disturbance includes reconstruction of an impervious surface. That's how it is currently, and that's how it proposed to stay. So the reconstruction is if you rip it all the way down to bare soil and you're back to impervious material, that's gonna count towards disturbance.
That's the 5,000 square foot, 2,500 square foot.
In a major development, to be a major development, disturbance, the state's minimum is 1 acre, and then half an acre is what we're proposing to restrict it down to for a major development. We're recommending a minor development be implemented as well, which has lower thresholds, and again, it would be like a lower obligation on what to do. So that addresses EC comments 1 through 4. I'm going to come back to 5 through 8 as we work our way a little bit more through the model. So back to the model, but I'm sorry the pages are not numbered. It's roughly 5. Where we have the major development, if you will. Below that, in the definition section, we have a recommendation to add a minor development definition. So previously, either you're major or you were nothing, and if you were not a major, you would just have to meet the existing flow characteristics. Here, we're defining a development that would be considered a minor development, and basically says, and you can read it, it's increasing 1,000 square feet or more of impervious. Adding 1,000 square feet or more of impervious, or resulting in 5,000 square feet of disturbance. So the major is half acre disturbance and the minor is 5,000 square feet disturbance. Major is 5,000 square feet new impervious, and minor is 1,000 square feet new impervious. And if you're below the minor, then it's the same as it is now, where we'll just look to make sure your flow patterns are maintained, you're not concentrating on increasing flow to any point in question along the perimeter. Later on, I think it's section 5, talks about what happens if you trigger a minor development criteria. Flipping to the next, it's like 3 or 4 pages forward. There's 2 highlighted green sections. Just reiterating, your minor, you go to, you have to adhere to the section 311-5. If you're not major or minor, you just demonstrate the post-development runoff will not cause an adverse impact to the adjacent property.
So. It just needs a flow chart. Right?
Or if I'm bullied, then
I think the blue section, there's storming over there. That opens up section 311-4 for major development. The area we have in blue, I think it's duplicative and it doesn't belong. If you look at the code we have on the books, the model, it's not there. I don't think we should put it redundantly. So this goes on to talk about if you're a major development, how do you meet the stormwater criteria? It's the 3 prongs. It's quantity control, quality control, and recharge and enhancements. You'll see I have a one-liner just clarifying in green where it's the section regarding linear development. So it's, I don't want to go back to the definitions for linear, but when you're constructing a public path or a walkway, it's maximum 14 feet wide, and to be considered linear development and not have to meet all this criteria, you have to make sure the access is made of a permeable material. We just want to expand on that and say that the subbase itself has to be not compacted or impervious as well, because you could put down a nice stone bed, but if you pack arborland below it, you're defeating the purpose. That's just a little. Go waiting to get to the. Or the municipality. Sometimes, like if you're extending standalone, dedicated, like pedestrian, multimodal, like bike and pedestrian path adjacent to the road, it's really hard to implement stormwater management. Because usually in a linear development like that, you're tight on horizontal real estate, it's spread out. In order to capture it and implement some of this green infrastructure the code requires, you need more horizontal footprint to go through the vegetated filter strips, and it's not often feasible, and sometimes it'll kill a nice public project for non-vehicular travel. The next section of 3 highlighted areas, 6, 7, 8, talk about our GI, our green infrastructure. So this code, and specifically the ordinance that the borough adopted to align with DEP's March of 2020 regs, there's a lot of emphasis on your stormwater management measures to not be our standard giant large detention basins. They want it broken up into smaller treatment devices. They wanted the green infrastructure. You have vegetated filter strips, swales, bioretention systems. So items 6, 7, and 8 are additions that we're recommending. We've seen implemented in other municipalities, and it's basically putting some controls in place where you have to separate these elements horizontally and vertically to make sure that they don't negatively impact each other. When you try to put water into the ground, there's a cone of influence based on the soil, the subsurface soils, that you can model how that rainwater is being captured and put back into the aquifers, and you want to make sure you're not negatively impacting homes, basements, or taking credit for their ability to infiltrate and recharge more water than they actually can if they're too close and fighting against each other.
So I have a couple questions on those items, if that's okay. The first one is number 7 on that, in the middle there.
Yep.
That's not something that I am familiar with, the GIBMP shall not be permitted to be constructed within 50 feet of one another as measured horizontally. Like, I guess that I'm concerned about that, thinking about if there were to be an application, like a large scale development on First Ave, and they had a flow through planter in the front, I would want there to be an opportunity to put in a bioretention, or a wet tree well. And that could certainly be within 50 feet, if it's just like a sidewalk distance. So would that recommendation restrict that sort of, green infrastructure implementation?
I agree. I wouldn't want an adverse impact like that, right?
Yeah.
So, unless the design engineer can demonstrate that no other locations are feasible. So, if they can't meet the 50-foot separation and they can demonstrate that it's not feasible to do it, and also with the mounting analysis demonstrate that it'll still work,
right,
that's fine. What happens sometimes is you slam them next to each other and you use the chart for small scale, bioretention, GI, use the chart, and you take your credit for those various prongs, and everything looks good. But when they're that close, sometimes they don't actually have that capacity.
Okay.
So I think there's something here that we can look into it further with the designer to make sure that if that 50 is, he can't squeeze it in because it's our recommendation to exceed, we can look to, we can look without having the need to ask relief.
Right.
We could work with them and agree that it meets that criteria.
Okay, you're right. As long as the...
We're not handcuffed.
Okay, yeah. As long as the numbers work, I'd love for there to be more green infrastructure opportunities.
Yeah.
So maybe just additional language that kind of supports
those
scenarios.
Clarify.
Yeah. And then it kind of leads me to my second question and last one for this area. For number 8, that last bullet there, it says that, blah, 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 the assumption shall be addressed in the case of scattered GI BMPs. Just not wanting it to be a large-scale BMP. So I totally get not wanting to do, we don't really have that option in our town, but not wanting to do a really large dry basin or wet basin, in a parking lot, you see on, 35 and whatnot. But I think when I think of scattered BMPs, is there an opportunity for a developer or stormwater designer to incorporate flow through, and then tree well, because that is one large system. Do you know what I'm saying? So I just also wouldn't want this language to restrict that to happen in a design.
Okay. So maybe we could look to clarify 7 and 8 on the objective being to ensure that they work properly and they need to be mathematically demonstrated. But this is not an attempt to discourage maximizing GIs.
Okay. Thank you.
Approaching halfway. The next green section item four with regard to buyer retention systems. And this is with regards to stormwater quality control. So there's some language here about, and it's in line with DEP's regs. This language clarifies the preferred option is GI. So there's not a lot of teeth there. It's the preferred option. It's a recommendation. It's not a requirement. Get into section 311-5, which explains what you have to do with the development that qualifies as a minor development. And again, it's this is if you're not a major development, but you still hit the two thresholds of 1,000 square feet of new impervious or 5,000 square feet of disturbance. And basically, the controls that are going to be put in place are you're obligated to deal with the water quality storm event, which is basically it's an inch and a half rain event. I'll just read it. So basically for each square foot of new impervious, if you're in the minor development threshold, for each square foot of new impervious, 2 gallons of stormwater shall be manually drained into structure. So there's an equivalent of the 1.5 inch rain event, retain it on site, and then utilizing our green infrastructure. So what that's going to do is it's going to improve the post-construction condition where that water quality storm is held on site. It's dealt with, you're reducing your quantity, you're improving your quality, and your recharge. Where in today's scenario, you're not obligated to do anything that all that rain just you can let it rip. I see there's some references to township from where I pirated the language from. That should be changed to borough. On the following page. We'll take another look. We'll take a further look for minor developments once the runoff is handled for a water quality storm event. At that point, where's the rest of it getting discharged to? If downstream can't handle it or more attention needs to be paid to it, then the code allows us the ability to regulate a 5-year storm event, which is 4 inches and change. So it gives us a lot more control of downstream impacts for a minor development. If you flip to the next green section, which we're proposing to add, the 5-year cover requirement. Gives a longer look back, basically. Often we'll do, as we discussed earlier, we're looking at what's being proposed to be the improvement on the site, and then it gets sometimes questionable as to what's the actual existing condition. Sometimes you'll see a driveway removed or a parking lot removed, and then you survey it, and that's our existing condition, where or vice versa, actually. You get some new impervious on the site, and then we get an application here, and the applicant wants to take credit as, oh, that's all pre-existing impervious. That's my existing impervious, which is already 100%. So what I'm doing now is not, doesn't trigger any stormwater management requirements, but this extra component will actually give it a longer look back to get an understanding of what the existing condition is.
So I have one question.
So the absorption rate, right, for that, you know, we, that is being recommended, right, for the properties. If you, you know, they build these, you know, you build a property, right, you have a new home there, and, you know, you meet this criteria, and then now the homeowner just discovers they have a water in the basement pump. Now they have three or two sump pumps pumping back water back to their property, and going to ultimately that absorption rate. Let's say on the property.
There, in this language, there are stored line criteria to support your design. And it's onerous.
It's a lot.
Yeah, if we're designing based, if I'm expanding a parking lot at a school and I'm obligated to do infiltration basins or other measures, we have to get redesigned. It lays it out. There's warnings and test bit requirements.
I just say there's the test bit requirements. I don't want it to dissuade people from putting in builders to be putting in the appropriate water management because they now have to consider this. We're a very wet town. A lot of us have water systems in our basement.
It's problematic, right?
Yeah.
Even when the rain stops, you
not it just saturates your property.
The water table is very high right now.
Yeah.
And the water's got nowhere to go.
Is there not already a requirement designed for storm drain against some pumps? Because there's lines parallel down my street that you're supposed to build tied into. They're already there. I know because I broke it. I mean, I built my house, and that's when I realized I was supposed to tie into it. But they're there. Is that required?
I think the only requirement is, correct me if I'm wrong, is you can't discharge over a sidewalk or, you know, into the road, correct, for icing purposes.
There's lines directly by storm drain.
There's every scenario. There's ones that have daylight at the curb, and like that's water that's coming out of the ground that's warmed by geothermal, and you pump that out. In winter, it just turns into, we have that, right? It turns into a glacier over the winter.
Back in the early 90s, the town was one of them for that purpose. We did Leonard Avenue, Center Avenue, parts of Center Avenue, parts of Bay Avenue, and the Bay areas, and encouraged people to connect. They made the connections to the curb and encouraged the property owners to connect to it.
They're there, for sure. I didn't know it was only there. I thought it was around. I guess it doesn't make sense over here because it's all over here. But
I just want to have a survey all the time for the salt function. Connecting it to the sewer system. And then the storm lines here bring the connections to the coast. That's what I can do.
So, yeah.
So that's a practice that really helps out. But I don't think that's what we've been doing.
No.
So, yeah, I'm not sure if it's a building code requirement or if it's just a local requirement in some municipalities to have a separation from your basement to the seasonal high. Like, I think there's some towns that don't have that requirement, but that's one of the recommendations we have here for the green infrastructure. Elements is to have a separation for the seasonal high to ensure that they'll actually work. I agree, some pumps from the basement, it's a different animal than a rain event that's peaking and washing out, but as Marty mentioned, if you have a real problematic area, I've implemented that in other municipalities where we put the drain in, we'll stub it out, and we'll encourage everybody to tie in. You don't want it going over the sidewalk, you don't want it coming out of the curb, and if you don't have that availability of a storm sewer system in the road, then you want to encourage it to discharge further away so it can dissipate across the lawn or a vegetated area rather than just concentrate.
Okay.
that's exactly what we were just talking about. Section is this. Requirements for site development, stormwater plan.
311-10.
Yes. Hydrated geotechnical analysis. That's exactly what we were just talking about. Ensuring that your soil conditions will be able to handle this. And you're properly setting vertically. We address minor development. We agree with the Environmental Commission on that. Item 7, with regards to fertilizers and pesticides, I noted, I agree with it. I don't know if this is the spot to put it in the ordinance. It could be a recommendation, or I think we should look somewhere else to incorporate those. While I agree. And then similar with item 8, I think there's mention to the shade tree ordinance rather than preserving the large mature trees here in the stormwater ordinance.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Romeyer. Thank you, Mr. Deacon, the Environmental Commission. Thanks everyone here on board. We've got a lot of good input and thoughts out there to get to Councilman Doherty and the rest of the mayor and council to take back for next meeting. So look forward to the responses there, and I think overall it's a really good plan that kind of shrinks everything down to fit the character of our town and the future developments and really raise accountability.
Just to reiterate, this body will see this again in the June meeting for the consistency review with the with some significant changes. Thank you.
Okay. That concludes the workshop meeting. Need a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Aye. All right. Call to order for the regular meeting. Nancy, roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Here. Item 3, approval of the April 4th, 2024 minutes. We need a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve, Josko.
I'll second. Mr. Hackel?
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Josko?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes. Item 4, approval of the attorney's voucher for March 2024. Motion for approval.
I'll make a motion.
Second, Josko.
Mr. Hasko?
Yes.
Mr. Hasko?
Yes.
Mr. Delby?
Yes.
Mr. Holland?
Yes.
Mr. Hasko?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Gilmore?
Yes.
Yes. Resolution for PB 24-02, Cornelius and Stoll, 64 Bay Avenue, B129, Lot 1. Need a motion for adoption.
Mr. Hackel?
Yes.
Mr. Hobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Jasper?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Resolution for PB 22-18, Baker, 170 Ocean Boulevard, B17, lots 8-01 and 8-02. Need a motion for dismissal.
I'll make a motion to dismiss, Jocelyn.
I'll second.
Mr. Hackel?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr.
Stain.
Mr. Jasko?
Yes.
Mr. Juicy?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Beerhorn?
Yes.
Yes. And now, new application, PB 24-01, Wortwich, 78 First Avenue, P 97, Lot 10.
Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed service in connection with this application. Service is in order, and the board does have jurisdiction to hear the application. This does include a D variance, so the class 1 and 3 board members will be required to step down. I'm also aware of the following exhibits that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. They include Exhibit A1. It's a application for variance of Wortwich, dated November 30, 2023. Exhibit A2 is a survey prepared by Richard Stockton that's dated November 4, 2006. Exhibit A3 is an undated layout plan. Exhibit A4 is review number 1 from your engineer, Sanford Associates. That's dated January 22, 2024. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. And Mr. Schilberg is here on behalf of the applicant. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Actually, just to clarify, because I just retained a week or so ago for the application, it appears to me that the only face of the application here is really just a change of use for retail to retail personal service. I do note that in the CMA Associates, CMP Associates letter, January 22nd, 2024, it appears that there's also, it seems like there's some reference to a change from hotel rooms to apartments, but that's not what we're seeking here. I'm going to elicit testimony from Tiffany Berryman. That's what we speak about what you're doing. It's really only limited to that request for the change of use from retail to retail personal service. So just want to make sure we put down the record to clarify that. It is a little bit confusing, but that's the only basis that we have. So having said that, I'm going to ask for testimony of Mrs. Perryman on behalf of the Perryman Group LLC.
Would you please raise your right hand and be sworn? Give you the swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding with the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
And state your name and address, please.
Tiffany Berryman. I'm one of the partners of the Berryman Group. Oh, my address.
Address, please.
My address is 605 Turner Drive, Elkford.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So, Tiffany, I'm going to ask you a couple of basic biographical questions. So, you are one of the partners in Berryman Group, LLC.
Correct.
And that's also known as Wortwich. Just tell the board if you could. So, what does Wortwich stand for?
So, it's actually an acronym. When you realign finally, you become a woman inspired to create her experience. Female empowerment.
So, that's Wortwich.
That's where we are. Right. And we are, if you're a Shakespeare fan, he refers to the Weird Sisters as having the ability to control fate. So, it's like reclaiming her power.
So, is the business presently located here in Atlanta?
It's on 78 First Ave.
Okay. And what is that business right now? It's operating, correct?
It's operating as a metaphysical shop, just a little witchy shop. We sell candles and crystals, and it's about spiritual empowerment. So it's about loving where you live. We're big historians, big local girls. And so it's really just about rooting ourselves in the history of the town. There's so much magic at the bay. There's just so much to be happy about here and proud of here. And so that's the kind of environment that we want to foster.
Okay. And you are there as a tenant in that location, correct?
Oh, tenant?
Tenant.
Oh, yeah.
You go home.
Yes, yes.
And you have a lease agreement.
We did.
And when did that start?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to scream. You're going to give testimony. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give can be the proceeding will be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth? And your name and address, please.
My name is Jack O'Berry, and I live at 7 Thank
you. Go ahead.
If I may, just to
so we're cousins.
And you are part of the Berryman Group.
You're yes.
One of the partners in the group, right?
Yes.
And you have a connection to the business as well.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so I think you're going to answer that question.
Sorry.
That's so.
Yes, towards the end of the summer.
I believe it was August. We didn't get in there until October, but I think it was the lease itself was signed in August.
And that would be
2023, yes.
So right now, we had some testimony about what you do right now. So what's the intention of what you're trying to do in terms of changing this over to a personal service?
Yeah, so a big part of this is building community. Building community through spiritual mentorship, spiritual coaching, astrological readings. I'm an ordained minister. I have a master's in theology. I'm not a grifter. and I just think that's really important to know, because this is just about empowerment. This is about, I've had many people come into the store, ask, do we do classes? I've had mothers with their daughters, fathers with their daughters. And so it's been really exciting to see the response from the community that they really want that. They want a place to come to better themselves, you know?
Okay, one of the things I'm going to ask you about is why is it that you think that this location is particularly suited for this particular additional service?
The actual location is what drew us to it. I always wanted to start the business. I wanted to do it in Atlantic Highlands, and when this space became available, there's a lot of connections to history just in the historic district, obviously, which is why we're here. When I talked to the people at the Strauss Mansion, they used to do like walking tours, and this was a part of that walking tour. There's some historical significance there. It's centrally located in and around people who are offering, I feel like, the same vibe. You know, the movie theater is trying to cultivate Atlanta Highlands pride. We're in line with that. We really want to partnership with like the bike shop and other stores, and where we're located really is central to that.
So your intention is also to work with other businesses in the area, not just you?
Yeah, we're not on an island.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you actually have some plans that you're going to try to elicit that type of cooperation or cross marketing with other businesses?
Absolutely, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of people come to us. So some of it was our vision, and some of it was stuff that people in the community have asked for and have brought to us. Local authors, other energy workers, other healers that, you know, want to have a space in the community to do that.
And can you give other examples of
some of the things they're talking about as well as with all the stuff that my cousin knows about the history of Atlantic Islands, and for me having moved back, like in the from Freehold coming to Middletown, I didn't know all the history, and so with the bike shop or with other, you know, getting a cup of coffee and coming in to check out the resource. So we really want to be collaborating with the Women's Chamber of Commerce, you know, partnering with them and getting more activated overall. But we want to show, like, so some of the things that you're talking about, like the magic of the bay, have a mural in our store which highlights like Twin Lakes and all the special places around that make Atlantic Highlands so magical. And so that's really part of like the history and bringing sort of that awareness everywhere as well, and partnering with other businesses.
I will say that the mural, if you haven't seen it, please come stand it towards us. There's Park Shorn Woods, there's a view of the city, and it's basically supposed to be kind of a magical view looking at the waterfront First Ave. So you're standing facing that. And a lot of people that have come in have said, oh, I just moved to the area, like post-COVID, you know, during COVID we moved here, and they're not even aware of, oh, where's that? They didn't know that Twin Lakes. Serious, because they didn't know Hartshorn, they didn't know some of the lore. So I feel like I'm a former college professor and teacher, and I feel like I'm educating people on a daily basis. So it would be nice to be able to offer a class that could talk about the magic of the bay, that could talk about loving where you live, that could talk about the history, and you know, have it in the store, because that's where it is.
And we talked about you and I talked about the other positive criteria that you have to show, and then there's a requirement that you have to show that you're acting in accordance with the municipal land use laws. And we went through a couple of those. So can you talk a little bit about, do you feel that when you're going to offer this service and granting this change of use to add a personal service, how would that contribute to the township itself, or to the terms of the township, or other neighbors in this zone?
Other than what I said, I feel like, you know, the store is there, and people can go and shop at any store that they want to, but this is something that sets us apart. It makes us unique. Atlantic Highlands itself is super unique, and to be able to promote that and capitalize that with the people who love the town as much as we do, I think it's only positive. We're not doing anything different in the space. We're not touching anything. We're not adding or, you know, giving no negative impact. We're not changing our hours. We're not, it's not going to be like midnight, you know, dancing on the phone. Like, that's not what it is. And so I think that the positive aspects are just giving people a sense of community that they already have it, but it, this could be like a focal point.
Okay. And speaking of which, that you don't foresee anything negative impact that you're going to, but if you got the change, things that you're going to do, you'll foresee a negative impact on the township, which is the community or the members of the community.
No, absolutely not.
And just one more thing. Who's working with the location right now?
Right.
Just yes. You. If you do get this change of use, do you anticipate that you're going to have to bring on people, employees, change your hours, anything like that?
Not that I perceive, no.
So it's really going to be you. It's just an extension of what you're doing, right? But, all right, anything else that you want to add?
I promise not to
have
to anybody.
Jack, just real quick, I'm excited to mark this down, all right, just to kind of just getting around to the description now. But you passed up to the board a series of 4 8.5 by 11 sheets with photographs on them. We need to identify what those photographs are. Do you have those copies there?
Sure, yeah.
And if you can just take them sheet by sheet and describe what the pictures show, starting with the first sheet, and advise us who took them, when they were taken, so we know, and that they accurately depict.
Sure, okay. I just want to make sure I have the same exact issue. So the first page, yeah, is actually once we out on the store, you know, having gotten, you know, painted and cleaned up the store and decorated. So it's all over the last few months. It's inside the store. See it, some of the merchandise and some of the actual branded merchandise that we've created. And then the second page had actually, like, we walked the purple carpet, so it's all with the magic of the bay and the mural, and people can take pictures. So we had, you know, we'll take pictures of people when they come in. And also, just a lot of this other pretty cool
So they were taken within the last couple of, in preparation
right.
for here. So we have a mat, a magnet in the bay, put it on your car and show your Atlantic City pride. We have some affirmation cards, protection salts, which are not sneaky, and they're, you throw them over your shoulder and say a little prayer. In my mind, you know, we like the brought the stewards and kitchen decor, so we have some housewares like pillows and things that you would decorate your house with. I do a lot, like I said, I do a lot of educating and conversing with people, so I did put up like a moon phase, so when they can come in, they can find out what the moon is in, we can chat about that. And Jacqueline did mention that we have like a walk the purple carpet. We have a little kiosk there with some QR codes, people can learn more about the town and learn more about us. Take a photo in front of the mural, which is painted with like iridescent paint, so it kind of shimmers. It's pretty cool. And then the last page is the picture of the before too, and what it looked like, and then our courts are. We cleaned up the courtyard significantly. The courtyard was overrun with weeds and debris. We cleaned it up, made it pretty. We're the only ones with access to it, so. That we had to clean it up.
I think it would just be really. Took the pictures?
I did.
Okay. And these accurately reflect what was there when you photographed them?
Yes.
Okay. I think it would just be really helpful. You know, we're talking about providing personal services of, like, I'm assuming some type of card reading or anything like that. In terms of how many people is there going to be? Is it one person at a time? Is it a group setting? How many?
Yeah,
like the duration of those, appointment. By appointments, is it walk-in, the hours of operation for all that? I think, like, some context around those services and what you're anticipating to do
would be really helpful. I actually have a pamphlet. I only have one. But they're individual services. They're booked online ahead of time. There's not going to be a gaggle of people coming in. And they're either 30 minutes or 60 minutes. We do have like two women's meetings a month. So one at the beginning of the month, one at the end of the month. One is like an empowerment circle for creatives, because I'm a writer. So it's for spiritual writers, right? People who want to use writing to be more, you know, get more in touch with themselves. It's just an hour long. Nothing is extended or like after hours or anything like that. And then we have like a new Moose Coven meeting, which is just to like connect to the season. So I'm an astrologer. I'm an ordained minister. We move with the seasons. We focus seasonally. So every month is a new season in terms of astrology. And that's kind of how it will go.
You indicated that you don't go beyond the regular hours with these meetings and classes. What are the regular hours?
We're open until 6. The only right now, so I'll be honest with you, the winter was very slow. We were trying to feel it out since we couldn't do some of this stuff. Our hours are from 1 to 6, and then the circle would be from 6 to 7.
Let's say that your business becomes robust.
I love that.
What would you want as your hours?
Yeah,
the board limits your hours.
I would.
That's who you're stuck with.
Yeah,
ask
I see what you're saying.
So like 8
would be the latest we would ever go anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not. I'm not a night owl.
I think what we're trying to determine is like, it's not at midnight or 1 o'clock
around
in the morning.
8 o'clock would be when we would be done.
Not early in the morning. It's really.
Noon would be the earliest we'll be in there, and 8 would be the latest.
And what would be the max number of people for one of these circles?
I've capped them at 10, you know, just for my sanity and for the space. It's a small space, but I don't know if you've been in there. It used to be Bungalow Road. We cleared it out. You can walk in there now. And so, yeah, 5 would be the most if I did a circle. I mean, 10 would be the most if I did a circle or a meditation group.
That is a version, isn't it? What did you just say?
We do have a little like just a little like loungy office area with just a couch and for the readings for the one-on-ones. Yeah. No, we purposely don't have significant merchandise in the back of the store for that reason. So all of the merchandise is in the front, pretty much in the front of the store. There's a little bit on the side, but we purposely left open space for that. Yeah.
And it's kind of pushing the occupancy a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. You think it should be less, you tell me.
Mr. Romeyer, did you have any questions you want to run through?
Yeah, thank you. Very briefly, so HBD's own personal service is not a permitted use, and that's one of the reasons for triggering the barriers. Can you describe the other uses in the building? What else is in that building?
It's just us. We don't know why that letter was sent that way. We have nothing to do with anything else in the building, just the first floor.
Right. So the board here, we're looking at the entire property to make sure that.
But we don't own it. Oh, sorry, I didn't get that.
No, I understand. So. In order for the board to consider the use is appropriate at that site, that we need an understanding of the whole property itself.
So that's all property. We don't even have access to the.
I understand you're a tenant in a larger building, so the survey shows there's a basement.
We do have access to the basement. Yeah, but there's nothing in it.
Okay. It's not going to be used as part of the.
No, it's a dirt floor.
And then upstairs is residential.
Well,
Okay. I just want to paint the picture of the overall use of the site. The courtyard in the back, how do you get there?
You have to walk through our building. Like, you have to walk through our store.
And that's going to be
used as part of the business operation in public?
We would like to, yeah. We would like to be able to go outside and sit in the circle outside.
Proposing to change any signage? Would you say the proposed new use of public service will promote the health and welfare of the public?
Sure, yeah, absolutely, especially for women.
We talked about employees, we talked about hours. Are you going to generate any trash or recycling?
No.
Bobby, no.
Just bad energy.
That's all I have.
Thank you.
Board, have any questions?
Is there a way out of the courtyard? Is there any stuff back there?
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's, yeah, it's open, it's not.
There's a gate, I mean, you can walk through the property or
up. Yeah.
It's actually considered an area of refuge.
I like that description. I like that description. Come to my area of refuge. I won't call it a courtyard anymore.
Oh, you did.
Any other questions from the board? Any from the public?
No, but I feel like I need one after that.
If I could just add for the board, the while personal service is not specifically permitted in the HBD zone, there is a parking criteria for that use in our code. Retail and personal service, which it sounds like it's retail, and now you're converting part of the space to the personal service, they have the same parking requirement, so it would be a wash with the proposed use against the existing use, 200 square feet to one parking stall, but you have no parking on site, correct?
No, just the lot.
And the lot is basically directly across the street, and it looks like it's less than 300 linear feet to the geometric center as well.
Is there any questions on? Any comments from the public? Any on Zoom? Want to make any?
I have nothing else to add except just indicate that the testimony, I believe, in the case that it is a positive method to grant that use, and there is no negative effect, and specifically within the municipal land use law, I believe that the witnesses have established testimony that shows that this change would contribute to the well-being of persons and preservation of the environment and the area and the neighborhood. There's no impact. In fact, it's a positive impact with the neighbors, not a negative impact. And it's sufficient space there to provide agricultural, residential, recreational, commercial benefit, open space for the public, as well as meeting the needs of Jersey citizens and both the conservation of historic sites and this district, and as the witnesses have testified, that they are actually interested in the history of the area. And so, granting that use would actually benefit and promote what the land use law requires, which is the conservation and promotion of historic sites and historic area. So, I would submit that based upon that, the applicants have satisfied all the requirements required to grant the change of use.
Great, thank you. More discussion. I can start things off here. I think you know, it's the parking is a wash from different services there. That was kind of a question I had going in. I think it's a good use of the space. It's a small space, creative use of the space, and you know, it's good to see a different type of business on First Ave. So I think you know, it's pretty well laid out.
Yeah, I would agree. I've been in the store, made some purchases, got some things for my wife.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's a good idea for the town. I think you have a good plan in place, and I think it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I see only benefits for the town and no issues with increased load and changes and even considering the additional use. So I have no problem with this, with the, you know, additional requests for later hours and whatnot, too.
Marty, any concerns load-wise or egress?
I got a few dolls I can order.
I'd make a motion to approve this application with the extended hours as discussed.
I'll second.
Mr. Apto?
Yes.
Mr. Holly?
Yes.
Jasko?
Yes.
Kuski?
Yes.
Erdos?
Yes.
Bearmore?
Yes.
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 Thank you so much. This really means a lot to us.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
That concludes our regular meeting. We need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
All in favor? Aye.
No, it's on the front lawn.